I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Welcome to Payment Security, a Cybercrime Magazine podcast series brought to you by GM SecTech. With operations in 50 countries worldwide and headquartered in San Juan, Puerto Rico, GM SecTech has over 50 years of service in the technology and security verticals. To learn more about GM SecTech, visit gmsectech.com. Joining me today is Hector Guillermo Martinez, president of GM SecTech. Welcome back, Hector. It's great to have you back on the show.
Great to be here, Hillary. Thank you.
So, Hector, according to Cybersecurity Ventures, a business will fall victim to ransomware attack every 11 seconds, with global ransomware damage costs predicted to exceed $265 billion by 2031, so in the next decade. We're all seeing more and more high-profile ransomware attacks in the mainstream media, as well as local news and things like that, for smaller-scale ransomware attacks. But from your perspective, Hector, what's going on?
Right. No, thank you for that. And I guess, you know, when we think about ransomware, Hillary, it's kind of the flavor of the month, right? Like, it's all over the news. It's in mainstream media. But the way that I think about it, right, the way that I think about ransomware, generally speaking, it's been around for a long time. Right. It's been around for you know, since the late 80s. If we look at the timeline of ransomware, it started with floppy disks. Remember the 5.5 floppy disk? Yeah, it was back. It was something. It was at an AIDS conference from a biologist who actually sent in the mail. I think it was around 20,000 diskettes. And people, you know, it said, this is the information 101, et cetera. People put it in and it encrypted their systems. It wasn't that extensive as far as encryption, but it, you know, it scared people, and there was a ransom note, and you would send it to a PO box in Panama. I think it was like $200 or something like that, and that's where it all started. So it's interesting that it's been around for a long time. It's just become much more sophisticated, right? And if we see some of the statistics recently, certainly since the beginning of the pandemic, we've seen 105% rise, right, since the start of the pandemic, as far as ransomware, of what's being tracked, right? That's actual tracking. And we know that not everything is tracked. So that's an interesting statistic. 73% of success rates in ransomware attempts, which obviously, you know, things are getting through. People are spending so much today, you know, companies and individuals in cybersecurity, but they are, you know, these threat actors are getting through. And the reality is that 51% of organizations today have somehow encountered ransomware. So I think it really is here to stay. It's gone mainstream. In the payment space, it's also becoming relatively prevalent. And particularly, Hillary, because what we're seeing as a PCI forensics investigator, one of 22 companies certified to do this worldwide, you know, the threat actors have found that it is relatively easy and quick to have an, you know, a great ROI if you hose somebody with ransomware. And it's almost like a pyramid structure. From what we have seen in our investigations, that, you know, there's a distributor, there's a reseller, there's so many folks involved in the process that everybody finds a way to be, you know, to have this become a very lucrative industry for them. So it is here to stay. I think that, you know, compared to other types of attack vectors, it is the flavor of the month, the flavor of the year, the flavor of the decade. You know, going on to the investigation research that Cybersecurity Ventures has done. But the reality is that it is nothing new. It's just a quicker way for a bad actor to make a lot of money, right? Because they are using cryptocurrency today to request these ransoms. And something that's also happening, just to add to that, is that there is a double whammy here, right? There is something called double extortion. So not only are we seeing, you know, companies getting their information encrypted and then, you know, requesting the funds, but they're also, you know, saying, they're threatening, right? They're saying, if you do not pay by X, we will publish your information, your sensitive information, out to the public. And, you know, that's the whole naming and shaming piece, which sometimes for some companies, that's even graver because they can go to their backups and sometimes reconstruct. So I think there's that double extortion piece. And one interesting perspective that we have seen, and then this is laser focused in the payment space, ransoms have gone up dramatically since the pandemic started. One item that might be of interest is we were involved in this last year. The insurance market was crushed with ransomware claims. I mean, it became, you know, it has become for, you know, big companies like AIG and Munich Re and all these very big insurance companies, a major topic. Also a business level conversation for them, but a major topic because it has become, again, flavor of the decade.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I've spoken with a lot of folks about ransomware, but I haven't spoken with folks such as yourselves who are in, you know, payment systems and payment security. And so I'm curious, you know, you mentioned kind of briefly how ransomware has been impacting payment systems, but I'd like to hear, you know, more in depth kind of, you know, how bad actors target payment systems. What are they looking to get? What are they exploiting, et cetera? I'd love to hear all that from you.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. And just to provide a little bit of background, I was mentioning earlier, you know, a couple of items of interest, right? The double extortion is certainly something that we've seen in the payment space. It is, the ransomware in general is extremely lucrative for adversaries. And I think the payment space is just an easy way to get that quick return on investment because the bad actors know that in the payment system, it's all about availability of information, right? And if that information is down, then those systems are down and that creates greater issues. And we've also seen a lower barrier of entry. So it's not like you're finding these very sophisticated teams in one part of the world that are just shooting out these ransomware strains. It's more about these, again, these pyramid structures, entrepreneurial structures of bad actors, and just finding, you know, ransomware as a service. So it's become very easy, right, to shoot a spear phishing email that's hosed with ransomware and infect, you know, do some lateral escalation and, you know, getting that ROI. In the payment space, I was mentioning earlier that we are a PCI forensics investigator. I would say that in the past 2.5 years, many of the cases that we've done for large financial institutions in the world is very specific to, it's somehow related to ransomware. And I'll give you a great example. Okay. A couple of years ago, we were tasked by a large payment brands, Visa, MasterCard, American Express, to support a client of theirs in our region and in our geography. And the challenge was they had a ransomware note. This bank was threatened by a ransomware group, and it was, you know, if you do not pay, it was in the millions of dollars, we will publish sensitive information on your customers. And it was about 11 million customers of that particular financial institution. So it's obviously a nightmare for any organization anywhere, right? And it's not only a PR nightmare, but it's a nightmare in all dimensions. And what was really interesting, it was an investigation that took us quite a while. You know, as we went through the process, we looked at attribution, we looked at contribution and cause as far as, you know, the investigation and, you know, pulling up the timeline of events. What we found, which was really interesting, and this is, you know, there's been some of this in the news recently. When we did malware detonation to really understand the underpinnings of this strain, we found something really interesting. This ransomware variant that we were studying that had infected these systems had a very peculiar characteristic. And that was that if the operating system that it infected was in either Russian, Belarus, Latvian, some of these Eastern Bloc countries, it would not activate the agent. And that I found was fascinating. We shared that information with law enforcement and the FBI and other organizations. And this has actually come to bear in a few different blogs we've seen in the past couple of months. And this was a couple of years ago. So we are seeing, you know, that there is a bit of attribution coming from, you know, Eastern Bloc and some of those areas. You know, I think there's a little more to smoke and mirrors that we've seen probably in the media and the yellow press and all these areas. So there is a little bit of nation state, so to speak.
Right.
But there's certainly the cyber crime component, which is really, you know, to make money, right? It's a very lucrative environment. And in the payment space, I can tell you for issuing banks, for acquiring banks, for payment processors, this is here to stay. This is a very big concern for all participants of the payment ecosystem. And the reality is the moment, you know, one of those entities is down, that is a big problem because at the end of the day, your sensitive information is running through those rails, right? So payment systems are highly vulnerable to this, and it's already impacting them in many ways.
Yeah, absolutely. I can only imagine. And that was helpful. And I'd like to also hear Anything you're willing to share as far as like what you're hearing from clients too? Like, is this, you know, is it a huge worry for them? Are they trying to like furiously ramp up security to help protect from ransomware, or just, I guess, what's going on there?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I would say that, you know, it is the flavor of the month, flavor of the year, flavor of the decade, certainly. And we are getting a lot of requests from our clients around what can they do to become, to be much more resilient to, you know, to a ransomware attack, to any type of cyber attack, but, you know, specifically or prescriptively to a ransomware attack. We talk plenty around breach readiness. It's not, you know, that it's not going to happen, but you have to be ready and you have to practice and you have to ensure that you have those playbooks ready to go when it happens, to ensure that all dimensions of the situation that you're going through, the incident or the breach, is being covered correctly. So that is very, very important. It's again, you know, part of that message that we bring out to the market. We're actually doing an event at the beginning of August, in a couple of weeks, with Visa for the Americas, North and South America, Latin America, touching on these themes. We are it's a PaySec Talks, so it's almost like a TED Talks type of virtual event. And the whole idea there is to touch on this. You know, what is Visa seeing with their payment fraud disruption team across the whole worldwide Visa network? And ransomware is a big theme there. What are we seeing as a forensic investigator? Again, I mentioned we have one of 22 certified labs by the payment brands here in our headquarters. And, you know, we look at all these different variants. We saw this last year with a bank down in Chile that would hose with a very popular ransomware strain, which also hit, you know, recently some companies in the U.S. And the motives are always the same, right? The motives are always the same. The communication is very typical. You know, they say it's a 24/7 chat relay that you have with the threat actors, but the reality is they typically work 9 to 5 Russian time zone or Eastern country time zones. So it's always biting your nails to get information back. But we are, you know, working with clients and helping them clean up, because again, it sounds sexy, but at the end of the day, you know, when we speak to law enforcement, when we speak to the FBI, we do the janitorial work, and that's the reality, right? We come in with our mops and we help our clients clean up, and that's the reality of our work. And it's tedious. It's sometimes difficult. There is a part where we have to negotiate on their behalf. It is really interesting because the Department of the Treasury, the U.S. Department of Treasury, sent out a notice last year warning companies that are attacked by ransomware that if they pay, they must ensure that they are not paying to a blocked country, OFAC, all these things. So there are more guardrails in place from the U.S. government, which makes it even more sensitive as you go through this.
Right.
And what I can tell you, Hillary, is that as we speak and we help negotiate with the threat actors on behalf of our customers, and we've seen everything. We've seen all these horror stories that it really are, you know, it's like being in the movie set and biting your nails, because it's, you do not have an SLA. You do not have a guarantee that you're going to get the encryption keys to be able to get your information back. I think what we're doing effectively with our clients is providing kind of a peace of mind that everything that can be done is being done. And so far, we've been able to recover 100% of our customers' and clients' information when we work these types of cases.
Oh, wow. That's great. And so it sounds like, I don't really know if there's a difference between short-term and long-term planning to mitigate the risk of ransomware. It sounds like it maybe is just one type of planning, but I don't know. I'm curious if there's a difference with your clients or anything like that.
Yeah, that's a great question, Hillary. I think there's a couple things. And there was an executive order came out from the current administration back in May, and it's going to be enhanced or amplified in the next coming month. There are some great best practices that most people are not practicing, right? Two-factor authentication, multi-factor authentication is basic. And they're requiring it for companies to deal with the federal government. But the reality is that mainstream America and mainstream worldwide commerce is not that privy, or is not that inclined towards just basic security hygiene, because number one, security is always a sunk cost, right? It's, you know, nobody wants to do it unless they have, you know, something happened to them, then they do it. It's like I say, you know, all the time, You don't put an alarm in your house or a fence in your house because it's pretty. It's, you know, something happened, right? There's risks, vulnerabilities, threats, something happened. So you are going to reinforce your security. Same thing in the cyber defense space. And so that's an area that I think is going to be helpful with, you know, with the new executive order. I also think that, you know, the bad actors that are out there that are finding very quick return on investment with ransomware. I mean, basically, the companies that are paying, they're funding research and development for newer, more advanced attacks. So we're only making this greater. Yes, and the FBI put out a notice about this. They said, we understand that private companies need to continue working, and it's up to them if they decide to pay. So the FBI has that in a notice. Obviously, you know, we do not negotiate with terrorists. That's an important point. But the reality is that some companies, you know, they can't survive, and it's happened in the past when they get hosed with ransomware. So that is happening, but the attackers are getting bolder. The attackers are getting much more creative, and this is going to continue happening in from a long-term perspective. So we're going to see, in my opinion, attacks that are going to be much more psychological. Again, we're seeing that double whammy, double extraction that's going on, the naming and shaming, and, you know, by the way, your files are encrypted. I think what's going to be happening more, it's the psychological piece. And I hope I'm wrong, right? I hope that, you know, that there's no, grave casualties, like physical casualties, but I think it's going in that direction, just looking at the past. So what I do believe that needs to happen, Hillary, is that companies in general need to have guidance, need to have at least a baseline of security, which is not the case today. All these fintechs that are, you know, they're appearing all over the place.
Yeah.
They focus on user experience, on the interface. But security is always that, you know, it's that after the fact conversation. So it's going to continue happening for a while until security is a continuous process across the board. This is why we always profess that baselines such as frameworks are key, right? PCI DSS is something that we love. We are a PCI DSS company across the board. Frameworks as PCI DSS, the software security framework, card production, forensics, point-to-point encryption, that is super helpful. Not only if you're in the payment space, but there's some basic requirements there that change every 18 to 24 months because actors, you know, their tactics, techniques, and procedures change all the time. They know about the contingencies out there. So I think that's really important, whether it's NIST, whether it's HIPAA. There are so many frameworks out there. Companies should be much more conversant and proficient around those to be able to repel a possible attack in the long term.
Yeah, absolutely. And Hector, anything else you'd like to share with our audience on this subject? I think it's your view of the long-term effects is interesting, as well as what you shared about kind of what you've been experiencing on the ground with folks.
Yeah, no, happy to. I mean, I'll just share a quick war story. I was mentioning about that, you know, when ransomware happens and your files are encrypted, you get a message, you know, that we're here to help you 24/7. You have gold support. I mean, it's always like, you know, they sound like benefactors, right? And the message in broken English, typically. When we've done some of these engagements for our clients, there was a particular case a couple of years ago where we also do settlement, Hillary, in crypto, which is we pay out in crypto when our clients authorize us to do so. Right, there are so many disclaimers. I was just going to mention a quick story. A couple of years ago, sure. A case that we worked on, Hillary, our client authorized us to do the payment in crypto. It was a high payment. And this typically happens, right? It's a quick process. We tell our clients, you need to make sure that if you're going to pay, you do this quickly because the threat actors are entrepreneurial and they're doing this across the world, and they'll lose interest very quick if we hold the line too long. So as we were negotiating, to bring somewhat the ransom amount down, which is very typical, we said, okay, we're going to make the payment. They send us a proof of life, which is basically a very small portion of their crypto key to ensure that they have what we need, right? Mm. So they have a little file that we can unlock, and that shows us that proof of life. We make payment. That was on a Thursday. And on Friday, it went, you know, crickets. We did not hear anything from them over the weekend. We were really concerned. We sent a note on Sunday to our client, said, listen, this is concerning. We have not heard anything back from the threat actor, from the threat team, from the bad actors. about getting the crypto keys, right, to be able to get our data back. So on Monday morning, our investigations team sent out a total post office in the dark web saying so-and-so group is of ill repute. They do, you know, they said they would give us our crypto keys. We paid in crypto and they did not come back to us and yada, yada, right? So we sent the total post office. In about an hour and a half, we get the host crypto keys and a very long note. It was a soliloquy of why, you know, what why they do what they do, and that they are, that they live by their reputation, and the reputation is everything, and, you know, honor amongst thieves. And and it was a bit in the broken English, but I thought it was so interesting that this is such a, it's all, obviously it's based on, you know, it's a, the pseudonymous economy down there.
Sure.
And they live based on reputation. So I thought that was really interesting motives and behavior on behalf of the threat actor, and just goes to show how this is big business in the underworld.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. How interesting. I hope that you saved that and printed it out.
It worked out great. We were able to recover 100% of the data.
Oh, that's good.
So it worked out in the end, but it was really interesting. Just that whole weekend of, again, it was just like going to the movies and seeing a Freddy Krueger movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is the behavior and the psychology of it, to your points, is very fascinating. And, just based on what I know about ransomware, it is very much, as we've been talking about, it's very much a business, and it's a career in other countries. And I think we just can forget that in other, you know, more first world developed countries. But it is, I guess I can see why they would be saying that.
Absolutely.
Well, Hector, thank you so much for coming onto the show again. It was so great speaking with you, and looking forward to next time, as always.
Likewise. Thanks so much, Hillary. Have a great day ahead.
Yeah, you too. Thanks. I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Payment security is brought to you by GM SecTech. GM SecTech offers innovative solutions and services in cybersecurity, governance, and compliance focused on managing digital risk. Their solutions are designed to detect advanced attacks and respond to them effectively, reducing business risk, fraud, and cybercrime. To learn more about our sponsor, GM SecTech, visit gmsectech.com. And you can listen to all of our podcast episodes at cybercrime.radio.